Hashtag you don't have to be Jewish.
Jacob Zuma, of course, back in the news. Not that he ever seemed to leave it. The trial continues. Delaying tactics continue. We've asked Uru, who is a legal expert. He's chatted to us on a number of occasions before to try and help us unpack it. For a man who wanted to, who demanded his day in court, we really seem to be seeing every tactic to avoid doing so. Ulrich, good morning. How are you?
Hi, good morning. I'm well, thanks for calling.
I am a good, thank you. So the dance continues.
Yes, indeed. Jacob Zuma's advocate yesterday, Dahlia Mpofu, arguing that the trial should not proceed remotely and online, and that his client should be given an opportunity to attend to court in person. That was the first issue that was dealt with. And the second one was, of course, his special plea application to have prosecutor advocate Billy Downer removed from the matter. So as you correctly point out, a twofold strategy to delay matters once again. I'm trying to be 100% honest with you. I'm not sure why that strategy has been adopted, but we'll have to wait and see what the judge rules today, whether it's going to be proceeding or not.
Is it not simply in the absence of all other defences or all other ways to try and delay this yet again?
Yeah, so, obviously that horrible word that we've heard so many times, it's unprecedented times. So, we are dealing with a whole host of trials that are being conducted electronically and remotely. But a criminal trial is different because there is testimony that is led. I mean, obviously an accused person has the opportunity to cross-examine witnesses via his legal team. And body language and, evasive action by a witness does play a huge role. But I think that is secondary to the application launched by them to have the prosecutor removed. In my opinion, they grasping at straws, saying that Billy Downer does not qualify as a prosecutor in terms of the National Prosecuting Authority Act. And I just think they've completely misunderstood the act, and there's actually no grounds for him to be accused. As you correctly point out, Jacob Zuma has been kicking the can down the road for the last 15 years. And this could just possibly be another strategy of his to try and delay matters. The one difference is, of course, that he's in custody at the moment. He is in prison. He does not have, that freedom of liberty to simply delay matters and to deal with it at a later stage because he is in custody. And, in practice, that is just what we deal with. If a person is in custody, there's a lot of pressure on the legal team to come up with results, and that could be playing a role here. He's of course in custody on a completely different matter after being held in contempt of court. So, his advocate did state that he could be out of jail in the next 2 to 3 weeks. I'm not sure where he comes up with that argument. The Constitutional Court still needs to rule on his application to set aside the Constitutional Court order which sent him to prison. But my opinion is that is not going to happen. The order will stand. And then he will be in the hands of the Department of Correctional Services, whether he qualifies to be released on parole or not. So postponing the fraud trial really does not benefit in any manner whatsoever.
The current incarceration. I'm fascinated. As a legal expert, you've obviously dealt with cases before where you've sat with a client and they've wanted to go a certain route. And you look at the facts in front of you and you understand or from experience, from training, from all sorts of things that there are not many options available. What happens? I mean, obviously you can't take us behind the scenes where Jacob Zuma is, or Dalia Mpofu is meeting with his client, who's Jacob Zuma. But what is likely to have happened here? Because what we seem to see, and there's been a lot of, I think, loose talk about, well, he's been ill-advised by his legal team. We don't know that, actually, because at the end of the day, I'm assuming that the client makes the decision. Take me behind the scenes there. What would happen typically in this type of scenario?
Yes, so as lawyers and advocates, we actually, you know, we obviously are creatures of instruction and we act on instructions from our clients. But that does not mean that you should just blindly accept instructions and orders from your client. Your job is to advise your client correctly and to give him the available options, you know, that are available to him and which option he should choose. In this instance, I have no doubt that, you know, the application launched to the Peter Maritzburg High Court to set aside or stay a constitutional court order was very ill-conceived. It was completely the wrong strategy. It could never have succeeded. And the court correctly found that to be the case. Similar with his application to set aside a constitutional court order. He's now claiming that he was never given an opportunity to state his version and to abuse mitigating evidence. But in fact, he was given no less than 6 opportunities. So, yes, you know, we do act on instructions from our clients, and obviously clients want the best results, and clients always want a lawyer to be a magician and to get things right that are a lot of the times not possible to do within the realms of the law. But that is when you need to advise your client, and you need to advise him on what the best strategy is going to be and most importantly, what the law allows you to do. In this instance, you know, I must be honest, and we never criticize colleagues, but I'm not certain why the strategy has been adopted. I'm also not certain why they would have spent so much time and wasted so much money on legal fees to approach the Peter Maritzburg High Court to the Constitutional Court matter. This is the first time that Dalyimpofu is acting on his behalf in a criminal matter, to my knowledge. Mm-hmm. But again, you know, I think that the judge is going to find today that the prosecutor should not be recusing himself and that the matter can proceed electronically. Alternatively, postpone for a few days and ensure that, you know, after he served his 14-day period in prison in which he needs to remain isolated, that he gets brought before court immediately and then for the trial to start. But right. He's reached that stage now. We're simply trying to kick the can down the road. It's no longer going to happen.
Well, I'm going to suggest another thought, and I'd love your response to it. You asked the question why Dalyimpofu would have taken the strategy or followed a strategy that took Jacob Zuma before a Peter Maritzburg court. If we take into account some of the statements that Mpofu made, one of which was almost a threat, and we spoke about it on the show, about another Marikana. If we take that and we look at what followed in terms of the looting, the riots, and the so-called insurrection, where we now understand, looking back, if you look at Clem Santa's article, that maybe this was actually about precipitating another Marikana, which would have created even more chaos had South Africans not pulled it together themselves, then maybe that decision was much more political than it was legal and criminal in terms of, or much less about legal process.
Yeah, I would be very cautious to venture on any conspiracy theory.
Oh, that's not a conspiracy theory. That's there. It's all there in front of you. Look, you can't. I can. That's my job to think about these things. But do you think it's outside of the realm of, and I'm not asking you, obviously, you can't know, and nor can I know. But if we look at, I mean, it can't be an unusual set of circumstances that, especially when it's a high profile political figure, that the legal journey taken is influenced by politics and is designed to influence politics.
It's certainly a very interesting theory. You know, in my opinion, and this is not based on any legal arguments, but I think that the looting and the rioting was that Jacob Zuma's incarceration was only the catalyst. Whatever followed after that was you know, absolute lawlessness and people just acting in a completely lawless manner. And, you know, to give Jacob Zuma the credits for that and Dalyimpofu, I don't think we should be doing that. I think
I hear that. That's
it was only the catalyst. Unfortunately, you know, the majority of our community don't understand the intricacies of the law. That, you know, it is difficult to explain to our entire population, you know, that there was in fact no grounds for them to approach the Constitutional Court, for example, or the Peter Maritzburg High Court, for example. Also, you know, the decision made by the Constitutional Court was a decision that Jacob Zuma himself gave the court no alternative but to send him to jail, because if they had not decided that he should serve a period of incarceration, then it would have rendered the Constitutional Court completely toothless. And we cannot have that. The Constitution is our absolute backbone of our society, and that is ultimately where the buck stops. If you disregard the Constitutional Court and you disrespect it in the way that Jacob Zuma did, then there are repercussions, and these are the direct repercussions of his actions. But yes, you know, one could obviously argue that only history will tell whether this was a very carefully crafted and orchestrated strategy by Jacob Zuma and his legal team. But until that is proven, I would like to believe the opposite.
All right, and that's where we leave it. Ulrich Ruh, legal expert, trying to help us plot and try and understand the strategies of Jacob Zuma.